Hello and welcome to another episode of Union Blue Radio. I've been doing too many podcasts recently because I can't even remember the name of our Buckeye State hockey one. I know, how ridiculous is that? But of course, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Matt Suva and Allison Lucan. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, ho, ho, happy holidays,
oh,
Sam.
Oh my gosh.
Matt is wearing a Santa hat. It is a lot, but you know, I'm a fan.
He brought us Christmas cookies.
He did bring us Christmas cookies. So we can never be mad at Matt.
No.
Not at all.
We love Matt.
Since the last time we recorded, the most recent game was the Detroit Red Wings game at Detroit. That game was a little odd for me. Obviously, what happened with Peter Mrazek in that game was a little off. The goals that were against him, they just seemed like not like him, and then where he tried to cover up the puck, and then he was not necessarily sure what he was supposed to do with it. It was a weird game. Allison, what did you make of the game?
Yeah, it was a weird game for sure, and I think what this recent stretch of games is presenting that I think is interesting is what is the team going to do when wins don't come as easily as maybe they have thus far this season? You know, it was kind of a weird play. They didn't really own the shot contest, but they found a way to win it, even with a very angry goalie.
Yeah, it was very odd, and I wonder... The thing about the Red Wings thus far is that they've had some actually pretty great goaltending overall, but they just can't get anything in the back of the net. And so there were some, you know, angsty fans afterwards talking about, you know, this shouldn't have happened, this shouldn't have taken place. But by the same token, they only scored one goal. So you can really, and I'm sure Blue Jackets fans have been there before too, where, you know, that shouldn't have happened, and the Blue Jackets you know, community is kind of up in arms about that. But, you know, there's really nothing you can do when you are only, you know, your output is so low like that. Matt, what did you think of the game itself?
I think that this, along with at least two or three other of the games that have happened since we talked last, Sergei Bobrovsky has been great. I know that in this game in particular, it was weird because it was coming off of a lot of great performances, particularly the ones against Arizona. And then all of a sudden, this game against Detroit, the skaters felt like it was a letdown, sort of, compared to what had happened. But in their stead, Bobrovsky was great. And I guess that comes to a balance. What do you need to win? How do you get the points? And sustainable or not, getting a goalie being that good is crucial, because not having a goalie means losing 8 games in a row to start a season.
Yeah, and Bobrovsky did have a .970 save percentage in the game, and this is one of the few games where Detroit actually outshot, or the Blue Jackets were outshot, but Detroit was able to do it. And Detroit's not really known for that either, but you can possibly put some of that on score effects and things of that nature. So it was an odd game and not necessarily traditional in the way that they had been playing in the past, but it was encouraging nonetheless that even in their off games, they're still able to succeed the way they did. And if that was technically an off game, their next game was an absolute drubbing, even though they also didn't look terribly great in the game either. They played against the New York Islanders on December 10th. They won 6-2. Jack Johnson had himself a game with 2 points on the evening. Bobrovsky with, once again, above a .900 save percentage, playing pretty darn well this year. What did you make of the game, Allison?
Well, you know, one thing we forgot to mention about the Detroit game was our little Lucas Sedlak finally getting on the goal scoring sheet, and he did it again versus the Islanders, which was awesome. As much as I talked about the Detroit game being a story of how they can win in different ways, I mean, the way that this team poured it on in the third, the storyline of them really being in an exceptional physical state and having stamina to play late into games and on the back end of a back-to-back seems to be proving true.
Yeah, for sure. Matt, what did you think of the game?
I agree with all those points. I know that's a real cop-out, but it's nice to see that this team, credit score effects if you want for teams not being as effective in the third periods of games that they're leading. In this case, the Jackets just had enough of it, and they went to town on the Islanders, and that's also very good news.
And what made it even more interesting in this sense is that they were able to actually overcome some of their demons from last year, because they weren't able to win any games against the Islanders, and just even from like a mental standpoint, that's encouraging. Yeah, anytime you can have something like that take place, you're going to take it while you can. And then when they after that, they then went on their Western Canada road trip. They started off against Edmonton, and one of the games that Edmonton itself is kind of an interesting team just because of who they have on it. They have some top-end talent. Their defense is kind of weird. Their goaltender can play out of his mind from time to time. You really didn't know what was going to take place because they were also a team that's actually had some pretty good possession numbers this year as well. Blue Jackets ended up winning 3-1. Matt, what did you see in the game that really stuck out to you?
Well, my takeaway was that it was weird to see Connor McDavid contained. Mm-hmm. I understand that's a relative term. Saying you've contained Connor McDavid means he still probably got two or three great chances just by being himself. But for this game, McDavid wasn't a big factor, and that surprised me. And the two D-men that were most paired up against him for this game, Johnson and Savard, which that gets back to the idea that the Blue Jackets have made some kind of switch, however exactly you want to credit it in terms of play style or matchups or
teammates,
whatever. It's something that I would not have expected coming into this game, and they were really strong against Connor McDavid of all people.
Allison?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we last talked, this was a game I kind of pinpointed and said, are we going to get walked again by Connor McDavid and be on every highlight show? And, you know, maybe it's the Jacket follower in me that, you know, when they do see some adversity, you think, oh, here we go. But to see them really control that game and make it through, honestly, the bad call on Jack Johnson there in the first.
That was weird.
Strange. But again, I mean, I guess you can say in the heat of the moment, you can see how at game speed that gets missed, and I don't know if I want replay back in the game, but...
Well, okay, so in that call, they originally... So Connor McDavid got high-sticked by Milan Lucic, which, good job protecting McDavid with Lucic. The officials initially called it as being against the Blue Jackets, and Jack Johnson was in that kind of little tussle trio of players. But the guy they called it against was number 10 for the Blue Jackets, who was several strides away from that play, that one, Alexander Wenberg.
He's going to lose his Lady Bing candidacy at this rate.
It's over. I mean, he's just tanking.
Really strange call. I understand why it was called, but strange.
It's like he doesn't even want to like play like a gentleman anymore. Like, what's that about, right?
It's heel turn.
Yeah.
Grown up and turned.
Maybe the W in NWO stands for Wenberg.
And then the next game, what did he end up doing? Wenberg got in a fight.
I'm telling you.
Which is completely against type. Unbelievable that actually took place. And that's because of a hit that took place on Brandon Saad. What did you guys think of this game? Taking the game in itself, it was... You know, before when they played Chad Johnson, he looked unstoppable and everything seemed to come from the outside. This game, for whatever reason, was almost like the other way around. When I was able to see, you know, at least some of the highlights, I didn't actually get to catch the game live. It seemed like most of the shots and everything else that was taking place during the game, they were actually able to get inside. And I wonder if that's a coach's adjustment or if that's something that they, you know, just weren't able to execute the way they wanted to before when they were at home. Did you guys see anything like that?
Well, what I want to go back and watch some of these recent games. One thing that Jack Hahn on Twitter at @ML_Hahn pointed out to me, I really appreciate his perspective on tactics on the ice. He said, you know, look at how many shots your defensemen have, and are they shooting or are they actually using their positioning to pass the puck down low to give a forward the shot? So I want to go back and look at that here because, yes, they were definitely getting in the dirty areas. And gosh, wouldn't it have been great if Wenberg had gotten a Gordie Howe? I mean, talk about juxtaposition there, man. We live in a weird world.
Zach Werenski, who had like a slight, you know, cold streak as, you know, as much of a cold streak as you can call it. He had two assists on the evening, 2-point night, or, you know, two assists, I guess, but kind of weird how that ended up.
He should have
down.
A goal.
Yeah, Gagne's goal.
In which he dove or did, yeah.
Flew across the ice.
Hit not-so-narrow man.
Not-so-narrow man.
Oh, it was such a good joke, too.
Yeah, what did you guys make of the Wenberg fight? Is that something that you... I mean, obviously, you don't want to see it consistently from now on, but is that something that you almost expect from the, like, the team as a whole to possibly stick up for their teammates? Because it seems like they're pretty tight-knit, at least in that sense.
I appreciate the idea that the teammates are interested in sticking up for each other. I appreciate the idea that Wennberg so either values Saad's contributions or values Saad as a person, whichever, that's fine, that he's willing to stick up for him. It doesn't matter to me which it is. As long as it turns out to protect other Blue Jacket, that's cool. At the same time, Wennberg has proven this year to be a very strong asset for the Blue Jackets in terms of offensive production. And the worry that I have is that if Wennberg gets into a fight, or whoever that's an offensive talent that's not a traditional fighter gets into a fight and injures themselves, a fist injury, a hand getting out of place, hitting a helmet, and that you're gone for a while. Yes, there's a lot of flailing with my hand that you can't see because podcasting is such a visual medium. Or he himself gets hurt during the fight, takes a bad hit, has a concussion. That's not good news. And that gets back to part of why I'm not as interested in fighting as a whole. I realize there's not a whole lot you can do to stop that kind of reaction, and in effect, it's nice that he has that reaction, but I hope it doesn't have to happen too often.
Allison?
Yeah, I agree. I think we're looking at an interesting transition for the team, right? Because fighting is leaving the game. Who's been taking most umbrage, if you will, when liberties are taken with the Jackets? It seems to be Nick Foligno. And I don't know that should be just his role going forward, but I also don't want to see I want to see these guys stand up and continue to demand the respect that they can earn on the ice, but I don't want them to, especially the younger guys, make this too much a part of their game. They're just too skilled otherwise to not. It's interesting now. I think, you know, Zach Werenski has never had a hockey fight. Just an interesting tidbit for you there.
In a broader sense, a lot of the reasoning behind why a fight would happen is a question of protection, either protecting your players from someone else in advance or retaliatory. And if the play is egregious enough as to deserve an actual retaliation, mm-hmm. then I think that the onus goes more onto NHL for mm-hmm. for better policing things that should go toward player safety. And in this case, maybe some of that should have been pointed toward the hit on Saad if it was a predatory hit. In the absence of that, I guess this response is okay, but if the NHL is not there to actively encourage player protection, that's not great. And then on the other hand, other people have said this, and I can't take actual credit for the phrasing. I don't know who has said it, a number of people I've seen say it. A good response to a hit that you deem as dirty is to score a goal on them. And mm-hmm. if you take yourself out of the play as a skill player by getting into a fight, that doesn't help the response with a goal strategy.
One Wennberg's case would more than likely be a pass rather than a goal.
Well, okay. You know.
That's neither here nor there.
I mean, I do wonder, too, because there's definitely an attitude around the club that I think has worked in their favor thus far of, we don't have any respect around the league, and it's our job to earn it. And perhaps sometimes, particularly the younger guys, it's learning how to manage how that manifests, right? Like, some, if you just had it, but you have to still, in context of all the things we've said, channel it effectively and not just lash out. And I wonder if that might play into it. I mean, I like what's happening overall so far, but just don't lose control over that emotion, I guess.
Definitely. So on Friday, they battled that kind of adversity. Then on Sunday, they battled a completely different type of adversity when they lost a couple of leads against Vancouver in a matinee affair. It was also a very odd game because for a period of time, it kind of seemed like they were had this in hand. But then after taking penalty after penalty, it kind of got out of hand. And one of the weird things at the end of it is the non-use of Zach Werenski. We're not sure if he was injured or if he was possibly benched. We don't know necessarily what's happening there. I mean, he actually tied the rookie scoring record in the game itself, so not necessarily that he had a bad game or anything. Bob wasn't too hot. Matt, what did you make of the game?
It was, particularly the first period, was just bizarre. It was boring. It was sleepy, and it happened so fast. There was so much inaction happening that there were so few stoppages, which that's a weird sentence to say, that because there weren't a lot of shots and thus pucks being frozen, or there weren't a lot of penalties, and so guys being called and plays stopping, that first period happened in so fast. I couldn't believe it was over, and nothing had happened.
Yeah, what was funny is that Jeff Rimmer, he said that most of the games, like this year, between the times that like the actual period takes place, is it's around, you know, 30 to 40 minutes. He said like the actual time on ice, like for like everyone involved, it was actually around like 23 and a half minutes.
Wow.
So like two commercial breaks, and then like after that, that's pretty much it. But it was a weird game in that regard, but they also didn't get a lot out of Bob that game. And that's going to happen every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And that's going to happen no matter, like, you know, who's in that. If you put McElhinney there, he may not have a great game, might have a good game. And they were still able to overcome. And I think against a Vancouver team that's not too hot this year, that's important to at least come out those two, because it's not necessarily a confidence breaker to lose to them, but it's just not a good sign to do so, especially when they have this upcoming week that's going to be absolutely nuts, and we'll get to that in just a little bit.
Another really good night for the power play, or afternoon, whatever, for game. The power play. I think this has been shared enough on Twitter that you've probably seen it, but at the Hockey Viz website has shot locations for individual players, and on Twitter has overlaid the shot location information for all the Blue Jackets players on the first unit of the power play, which has been the most effective unit. And it's really neat to see how tightly constricted each player is into the zones that they are.
And I, you know, to kind of just recap everything we just talked about, I'm not sure if you guys noticed this, but they won all of those games. despite, you know,
wait a minute.
Maybe any criticisms on our end, the Blue Jackets are now 25-4. It is nuts, and this is tied with a franchise record, I believe.
Correct.
For most wins in a row. John Correct. Tortorella in that game against the Canucks, he won. That was his 500th career win. In some of those games, they didn't have Nick Foligno. Oliver Bjorkstrand took his place. Out of all those over that period of time, what do you think was the biggest storyline, Allison?
I mean, I think I like the Tortorella storyline because I just think it's fascinating to watch this go down with so many people who predicted that he was just going to flame out in some massive self-destructive, I don't know, plummeting through the standings. But, I mean, the story really has to be the win streak for this team, because I think we're finally starting to see a shift in the national media narrative. I mean, you can still pick at some things, but it's becoming harder and harder to find something to say, ah, it's just because this is happening, or it's just because this. It's going on a long time. And I'm also now, not that I want the winning streak to stop, but I'm really intrigued to watch how this team responds when things start to go bad. You know, one of the things that I loved last night was Seth Jones, who's so even keel, when he scored that goal, like, he showed so much emotion on the ice, the game winner, and that was pretty awesome to see. And I want to see these guys carry themselves through game 50, through game 60. I want to see, eventually they will lose a game. Just thought I'd prepare you for that. It's going to happen.
I don't know. Maybe.
It will. But how do they respond after? Because I think that's going to be when they start to really solidify that what they're doing isn't a fluke. That they're not just riding high on this wave of positive emotion. That they're like, nope, we can come back from it. Because that's what they tell us they'll do. But now I want to see it happen.
Matt, what was the storyline that you are interested in?
I think a part of the story of the win streak, which that is the overriding story, I agree. A part of that is that the Blue Jackets still have the fewest number of games played in the NHL. And somehow are sitting, as of right now, which will change a little bit, they're sitting at third in the Metro. And
yes.
They have the Rangers, who are sitting in first and only 3 points ahead of the Blue Jackets, have played 5 more games than the Blue Jackets.
It's insane.
That's nuts. And I realize that's just a quirk of the schedule. Everyone will play 82 games. That's not a big deal. But it's very odd. And I suppose one of the more positive elements for the Blue Jackets going forward is that they banked all these points. And Not to say that they should coast the rest of the way, but they could coast, and it wouldn't be as traumatic a drop-off because they have banked so many points so early.
We saw how hard it is to gain ground if you start back. Mm-hmm. We've seen that how many years now? So to see the flip of it, like Matt's saying, it's, I mean, we haven't hit the meat of the Metro schedule. Those four-point games are going to be interesting for sure, but to have 44 points now is huge.
It's unbelievable, especially a lot of times the cutoff is around 93, 95 points. And I was actually talking about this on my other podcast. I think it was with Travis Hughes, and he said, look, they're both Matt and Allison. I said, look, like you guys could totally look. you the listeners. Fair. Yeah, exactly.
Humble brag by Sam Blazer. No, multiple co-hosts.
Not at all. But Travis Hughes is on, and he was saying that you might have a team that's actually like pretty close to like 100 points or maybe even 100 points that could be like sitting at the outside looking in, depending on how, you know, how well they succeed. But also there's going to be some, you know, cannibalistic tendencies from the Metro itself. I think the storyline for me that I really thought was interesting was Oliver Bjorkstrand being called up, and then almost bit by bit, we almost got explanations of what the team thought of him.
Great point.
If that made any sense.
Yep.
Is that they were kind of like, you know, we expect him to still be a part of this team, like, long term, and we really enjoy his style of play, but, you know, he may not be strong enough, he may not be in shape to the level that the head coach wants. And when he's down at the Lake Erie Monsters, he's not, you know, scoring, like, hat trick after hat trick after hat trick, but he's still performing pretty well at a point per game pace, almost, you know, 0.75. So you really can't complain about his production down there. And I think he just may have a longer production, like, or developmental growth path than anybody else.
He's a slight guy. I mean, he's a little lithe gentleman. And, you know, some of us were in our press seats before the game, and we were talking, we're like, have you ever heard a head coach in Columbus be that effusive about a prospect coming up? I mean, Tortorella was basically saying, I'm just as disappointed as him. I know he's going to be a huge part of this team going forward. I mean, this is a coach who wants to will this kid onto the team. And while he, you know, they did talk about how he wasn't probably in shape enough and didn't get more strength like they had hoped, they were also understanding of the why. It was a long Calder Cup run. There was some international play for him. And they've basically said, we're going to have him here in Columbus next summer.
What I find interesting about Bjorkstrand and kind of that entire development overall, and this is kind of just the usage from Tortorella in general, and we brought it up earlier, and I think we brought it up the last podcast, is that Scott Hartnell, Sam Gagner, those players have been put in position where like they can succeed in their role, and they're unbelievable in that role. And I don't know where Oliver Bjorkstrand's role is now.
Yep.
And I think he could be somewhere where you could put him on like the second power play unit and put him on the fourth line and just let him grow. Like now, you could do that now. Mm-hmm. But you don't want that because you have the players you have and they're not being bit by injuries, which, you know, knock on wood, that's going to be not going to be happening anytime soon. But all teams are faced by injuries. So, I mean, Nick Foligno's out for a couple of games with, what he seems to be a stomach virus. So,
which isn't really an injury.
Yeah.
No. Another element to this win streak is that it has been production from a lot of different players. Right now, the Jackets have, I think, 8 or so players that are producing at a half a point a game. That's all situations, even strength and power play and everything. And a fair number of shorthanded goals, so that's weird. But to get that amount of even production, I realized that some of it is heavily weighted toward Atkinson's production on the power play. For instance, he's over a point per game right now, which is pretty nuts. But to have that coming from so many different players represents several lines clicking, represents a power play that's going for both units. Even the second power play got a look in the most recent game and looked really strong. That pass from Hartnell to Saad was great. So to have that kind of balance is another important reason as to why they're winning in different ways every night. It looks the same on the score sheet, or on the scoreboard, but looks different on the score sheet, which is useful. And that does come around to Sam's injury comment. What happens if someone really important goes out? do the Blue Jackets have enough depth to cover up for that?
Well, and we saw too, like when Bjorkstrand went in, I mean, I think we saw him flub a little bit. There was, I think, one play where he and Wennberg ran into each other when they entered the zone, but it wasn't horrible. It wasn't like, oh no, this line is now rendered completely ineffective. So
I mean, he still had an assist in one of those games, right? So yeah. It's like, where really is like the drop off there? I mean, and now, I don't think there is much.
And now that Anderson and Calvert and Sedlak are all producing, those are all extra bonuses compared to just Foligno and his line. It's good news.
Yep.
It is good news.
It is good news.
That now some, you know, so-so news, depending on how the Blue Jackets play moving forward, they have, next couple weeks, they have some tough teams to play. They play Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, Montreal, Boston, Winnipeg, Minnesota, and Edmonton once again, play Boston again also.
Rough going.
Yeah. Only one back-to-back, though, in that series of games.
So there, it won't be too tough on that regard. But what's the game? And I already have my pick, and I think we all probably have a similar pick, but what game do you think is going to be the one circled on your calendar?
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Pittsburgh for me as well.
Los Angeles for me, because I still think they're the best team in the NHL.
You're lying.
I understand that the Metro matchup, whatever, is crucial. LA is insane. They've been great for the past half decade, and they threaten to just suffocate a team. And for the Blue Jackets, who've been flying so high, it concerns me in a non-logical fan perspective, because if they suffocate the Blue Jackets in the first game in this streak, do they lose all that momentum against Pittsburgh? Is that over then, and then they slide into oblivion? I know that's
you know, Jeff Carter just called out his team.
I understand that.
Okay.
That's just the eternal pessimist in me who continues to like terrible teams like the Buffalo Bills.
What about you, Allison? What do you think of the Pittsburgh game? What do you expect to see? And we're actually going to talk to Bill West from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review in a little bit about this. But I want to hear a little bit of your thoughts before we jump on with him.
Yeah, I mean, I've when I started to realize how late it took to get into any Metro games, and that there have only been, what, now four, I think, on the schedule. I think all of these are going to be really important games, with particularly how tight the whole division is. And I think that this is a test. I feel like there's a lot of Mike Sullivan and John Tortorella, and there's a lot of John Tortorella and Mike Sullivan. And so it's going to be interesting to me to watch from a strategic perspective, from a talent perspective, from a style of play perspective. I think it's going to be one of the first real benchmark games, and for fans too. I just can't wait to see how it goes. I hope it's really compelling hockey no matter what.
I mean, I think even the past 3 years, even when the Blue Jackets have been down on their luck, the games have been absolutely unbelievable.
For sure.
And you really can't go wrong with the Blue Jackets and Penguins right now, and especially with both of them playing as well as they have. There's going to be a little bit of a bragging rights thing going on. You better believe, like, and you better believe that, like, Brandon Dubinsky, who's, you know, not had that great of a year, is definitely going to, you know, be up for that game, because he's going to be more than likely matched up with Sidney Crosby, which is an entire storyline in and of itself. But it's going to be exciting, and I am totally excited for that game, and that's one that I'm going to be absolutely glued to the entire night, because how can you not?
I mean, the other interesting story becomes goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bob cannot play, and I personally don't think he should play all of these games. And now it does become about schedule management too, right? Like, you want Bob in net versus Pittsburgh, so...
But you also want him in net versus Montreal.
Right. So, I mean, and I don't know that I'm on the back-to-back, but then he's clearly sitting out... Well, I don't know. I'm not a coach, but you got LA after he comes off playing three or however many in a row, and then Boston away. Like, it's just... I don't know.
It's going to be tough. But I think we can actually ask a few more of these Pittsburgh questions to Bill West, so we won't waste any more of your time, the listeners, and we'll be right back with our conversation.
We were wasting your time, but here comes the good content.
Yeah, this is the good stuff right now. We'll be right back with our conversation with Bill West. And we are back, and we are now joined by Bill West, beat reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Bill, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Enjoying Pittsburgh warming up a little bit after a frigid and unpleasant weekend. I hope you guys are doing well.
Yeah, we're thawing out as well right now. Another player
had a miserable weekend.
For sure. Now, another player that thawed out and is actually on fire right now is Sidney Crosby, which isn't necessarily surprising.
Wow.
He's been incredible his entire career, but this year it's the goal scoring that's barely been catching everyone's eye. How do you think this compares to past stretches by Crosby? Has the high goal total come at the expense of his playmaking, you think?
I don't know if I'd go that far. I think he's driving play. You certainly can look at and see from his numbers that, yeah, he's not getting the assists that he did at, maybe previous seasons. But I suppose if you're scoring the goals, then kind of, as a consequence, you're not going to get as many chances to hook up the other guys on the ice. So I think we'll see a balancing out. I don't think Crosby has gone out of his way to avoid passing or anything. He's still very much a guy who looks to distribute. Patrick Hornquist has had plenty of opportunities. If you look at his scoring chance numbers, just hasn't quite buried anything. So you'd expect his shooting percentage to come up a little bit. Connor Sheary's been hot and cold. So I think, again, if we're talking a couple of weeks, months from now, we'll see numbers that are more appropriate for Sidney Crosby.
So another player that has caught at least my eye has been Justin Schultz, and he looks like a completely changed man on the Penguins. What do you think is the difference between Pittsburgh Schultz and Edmonton Schultz? Is this as simple as usage? Is it just being with a good team for once? Is it something else altogether?
It is yes. The answer is yes. it's a lot of everything. And Justin will certainly own up to the confidence and the new scenery part of it. He really, from pretty quickly in his time with Pittsburgh, made it clear that, yeah, the Oilers environment had weighed on him and got into his head. The people were booing him by the end, and, players sometimes deny that they hear that stuff, or, they just say, I don't care. But Justin openly admits that it got to him, and he just, really had kind of lost sight of who he was as a player up there. So he comes to Pittsburgh, and again, Sergei Gonchar and a couple of the other coaches and player development people really just helped him, kind of redefine his game and focus on his strengths. The Penguins' playing style certainly agrees with how Justin wants to play, as far as moving the puck, playing fast, playing a skilled game. You're not spending really any time, ideally, in the defensive zone. So all of that lines up. And then, the usage is a huge part of it. Justin Schultz and Ian Cole have been this fantastic third pairing for the Penguins. They get the highest percentage of zone starts among the D pairs. And it's actually gotten the percentage has come down this year. So I wouldn't say they were as sheltered as they were in the past, but they're still, as a pair, sheltered. And they're still facing mostly bottom six forwards. So they're taking advantage of the matchups they are assigned, and it has led to this, as you said, just a completely different player from certainly what they acquired from Edmonton.
Now, late last week, the Penguins announced that Chris Letang is out for a few weeks with a lower body injury. What do you think Letang means to the Pens, and how much will his absence impact the team in the next little while? It feels like it would be completely game-changing move for them.
It's always funny when anyone discusses the most important players for the Penguins, because it always starts with Sidney Crosby. It's just, that's what happens when you're the face of not only the franchise, but to some extent the league. And then it's what does Evgeny Malkin mean to the team, and what does Marc-Andre Fleury mean, and Phil Kessel's now in this discussion, and Letang's name always comes up. But I think some people, unless you follow the team every day, people just generally don't put Letang number one at that list. But he does change the entire shape of and nature of the defensive corps, because no one else in that that unit can do what Letang does. No one else even comes close. In terms of the minutes he logs, the kinds of matchups he handles, how well he creates zone exits and zone entries, and really just makes the game flow, offensive, defense, and vice versa. It's his skill set is certainly unrivaled among the Penguins. I'm sure there are people out there that can debate whether he is top 10 in the league defenseman, but it's just it's a asset that they can't replace, you know, with even a group of people. You know, Trevor Daley has certain skills that they can use, but of course Trevor Daley is now out a few weeks, so they don't have his abilities either. So you're really at this point, you're asking someone like Justin Schultz, who, as we just said, got the successful by not having to handle hard minutes and not having to, you know, just really shoulder a big burden. So the Penguins are in a tough spot. They don't have anyone that you know, even remotely resembles the abilities of Letang.
So we obviously are focused on the Penguins since you guys are coming to town later this week. But, you know, for Columbus, it's a little bit new this year that we're lucky enough to be watching the standings a bit more closely. And, I mean, did you expect the Metro to be like it is even this early in the season, to be the gauntlet that's happening? And what do you think is going to happen with so many teams fighting for the top spots even this early in the season?
Well, I guess your listeners can call bullshit on me. I'm allowed to swear on this podcast, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's fine.
Children friendly. Okay. yeah, people can call bullshit on me, but I had a lot of confidence in the Metro. You know, I really liked what New York did with their forward corps during the summer, certainly going for fast guys. To some extent, I don't want to give the Penguins credit. I know a lot of people have said that, you know, the Penguins, because they won the Cup, became this blueprint for how to build a Cup contender. And they certainly affirm that you can go out and find players with skill, you know, whether it's the right blend of skill and speed, and make them functional fourth liners or third liners, and kind of get rid of the goons and the you know, checking line guys. So I really like the way New York built their forward corps. I had a lot of faith in Columbus. I thought, you know, for as poorly as they did last year in the standings, some of their underlying numbers were good. And more, well, I wouldn't say more importantly, maybe just as importantly in my eyes, they won the AHL title. And I'm just was convinced that if you win the AHL, you probably have some talent. Now, granted, you might also have some, you know, 29-year-old guys who are just kind of caught in limbo. But I didn't think the, you know, Lake Erie or whatever they go by now had an entire team of 30-somethings. So I figured that, you know, Columbus probably had some prospects coming, and they did well at the draft. That helps too. So I liked Columbus. They're really the East in general. I just thought the floor was coming up, because, you know, you look at the other side, Toronto's been much better. Carolina's better. It's not a conference with a lot of, you know, gimmies right now. So yeah, the Metro in particular looks scary. I don't know if I think it will really cool off that much. I'm sure every team will have their, you know, period where save percentage and shooting percentage happen to go down at the same time, and you get in a little bit of a slump. But I think Philly's for real. I think Washington's for real. Penguins are for real. I think Columbus probably will hang in the conversation for a while. So it's going to be interesting.
Well, you've kind of given us a window into your assessment. What does Columbus look like from the outside? We've found it to be a generally unexpected kind of year. what do you think of the sudden success? I mean, you've kind of hinted it at prospects being a part of it, but how do you evaluate it on the whole for Columbus?
Well, I think they're playing the style of game that's, again, in vogue, certainly in the East. They seem to have really good underlying numbers. They play a pace game. It's funny, and to some extent, I loathe the inevitability of a Mike Sullivan, John Tortorella storyline coming back, because I thought we were done with that after last year. Everyone wrote their Tortorella, Mike Sullivan. They came up together, and you know, when Sullivan became the coach of the Cup champions, I figured he was probably safe, and Tortorella would kind of just be a footnote in his history. But now with Tortorella being the coach of a successful team that also plays somewhat of a similar style, I assume that there will be more think pieces about how one influences the other, especially when they meet on you know, later this week and beyond. But I think the Columbus, again, you look at that power play and the rate they're converting, they might cool down a little bit, but it seems they, you know, from what I've read online, they have good structure. They have kind of a plan in place. This isn't just a team, you know, whacking the puck at the net and happening to get bounces. So, again, I still may be too early to tell, because, like you said, some of the prospects maybe cool off, or I can't tell for sure if they're an injury or two away from being screwed. so, yeah, that's true of a lot of teams, I suppose. But, yeah, I only know the little bit I've seen through box scores and, you know, what's being written. So I'll get a better look at them later this week.
So you kind of spoiled my last question for you, and I will tell our listeners, Bill is someone who I read religiously, because you and I both like to write about the game a little bit similarly. You've had a lot more to write about than we have historically. It is the whole Mike Sullivan, John Tortorella question, because last year at this time, Torts was telling us he would never change the way he coached his teams. And just as you've described, it's changing now. And I'm playing a little game with myself where I literally look at quotes that you pull from Sully, and sometimes it sounds almost identical to things that Torts will say. And I'm just curious if you think it's just, like you said earlier, the trend of the league. I mean, does Pittsburgh get more credit because they've won with the strategy, or are these two guys more symbiotic than we might think, or are you just sick of the narrative altogether?
Well, the part I got sick of was just the, I guess trying to write about Tortorella with Sullivan not being cooperative, because Mike Sullivan,
gotcha,
for as long as he has worked with John Tortorella, maybe you guys will have more luck on the flip side, you know, Sullivan doesn't really say much about the relationship he had with Tortorella. He says he respects him, and
yeah,
obviously they enjoyed working together, but he never really, explains how he viewed the game versus how John viewed the game. He never explains what he thought of Tortorella's behavior, because, you know, Mike Sullivan, of course, is very different,
yeah,
in dealing with the media and, controlling his emotions, things like that. So, It just wasn't a conversation starter, I guess. But we never, the question's never really centered on, do you view the game differently than John? That we never got to that point. It kind of came up this summer when the World Cup of Hockey,
right,
we saw the Team USA build a strange roster, I guess we'll call it. So it is kind of, I guess, if there's a new way to tackle Tortorella and Sullivan and their history and where they stand now, maybe we can get more out of that story. Did Sullivan have a conversation with Tortorella and kind of open his eyes to how the game is played?
Right.
Did Tortorella come to his own conclusions? Or again, maybe, John's been a coach of a lot of successful teams, so it might just be that he always had the ideas. Maybe he didn't think he had the personnel, the last year or two, or he just was clinging to, whatever worked in New York or Vancouver or, mm-hmm, whatever previous stops. So time will tell, but yeah, it's, I think any coach in this league, and when you look at the other successful teams, outside of LA, how many teams are really playing a style that's drastically different from what the Penguins and the Blue Jackets and New York and, even the Canadians, they've become a faster team and are playing with more tempo this year. So it's the state of the league right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Bill, we appreciate your time today. But before we let you go, we'll give you an opportunity to plug your Twitter account where we can find your writing and anything else you'd like to talk about before we let you go. The floor is now yours.
I thought we were going to talk about The Wire at some point. I'll look for Ryan Stimson. I suppose tackle my favorite Wire characters and many other questions up there some other time. But you can find my work and various Wire references at BWest_Trib. That's B for Bill, West like my last name, and the direction _TRIB.
Awesome. We appreciate your time today and coming on today, Bill. We're back after our conversation with Bill West from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Great conversation, but we're going to end this episode with our favorite segment, plugs.
You seem confused as to whether or not that was your favorite segment.
I wasn't sure if I wanted to brand it as the favorite segment, but I'm all in. Yeah, 2 feet in. I'm all about it. Matt, do you want to lead off with your plug?
I can. I would like to plug A Charlie Brown Christmas. It is, I think, my favorite Christmas movie.
I love it.
It's either that or It's a Wonderful Life.
Grinch.
But Charlie Brown Christmas comes with the great music, and that's the real important part. So that's what I'm plugging.
I was going to plug Rogue One, but I think I'm now going to plug Christmas Story. That's my favorite Christmas movie. And so now, Allison, if you don't plug a Christmas movie, then this is, all for naught. I'm just kidding.
Well, if we're going to do that, I'm going to plug The Grinch. Because it's the best. I think Charlie Brown's close second, but...
With Jim Carrey?
No, that's not even real. But as it being the holiday season. I would like to plug my wonderful co-hosts, Sam and Matt, who make this show amazing.
That's very nice of you.
And I'm so thankful for you guys, and I love our times together, and I think it's really cool that we finally get to enjoy some good hockey times, and I wish you both wonderful holidays, because I love you guys.
Well, thank you.
No, that's very nice of you. I wasn't expecting that, so I'm kind of like scrambling for a response, but we are very appreciative. Thank you very much. I guess to close out the show, I guess I have to read off the Twitter accounts. Yeah, read off the Twitter accounts and do all that. But you can follow me at @Sam_Blazer. You can follow Matt at @ZeekBud. You can follow Allison at @AllisonL. You can follow the website at @BuckeyeSTHockey. Go to BuckeyeStateHockey.com and see all of our content there. Go on to iTunes, rate, and subscribe to our Union Blue Radio. We'd be very, very appreciative of that. Matt, Allison, anything else before we go?
Happy holidays to everyone.
Yep. We'll see you maybe before the new year, maybe after. We're not sure. We'll figure it out.
Exactly. But until next time, bye.